Hello, this is Gideon Malstein, and this is a response midday for the 21st of Tevet. Today we're going to talk about the Tzitz Eliezer's views on key money. The Tzitz Eliezer 428, volume 4, response number 28 from the 21st of Tevet of Tufshin Yud Gimel of 1952. Always have to check these things, but 1952. So this is the young state of Israel, and I think it's relevant here to note that I am now giving a shiur in my local neighborhood on Monday nights, actually an open shiur to all of you. You're going to be in the Bronx and Riverdale on Monday nights and want to come to the shiur, you should email me. It's grothst@gmail.com. I can give you the details. But Tzitz Eliezer also wrote a book called Hilchot Medina, The Laws of the State, and it's an interesting work, and one of his major points in that book is he thinks that it's wrong for us to think that halacha can't cover a modern state, and halacha could cover a modern state. And so as we watch this issue, which is a practical issue of how a state deals with housing shortages and rental agreements and landlords and things like that, I think that's sort of in the background here as well, as we'll see. So the question that was asked to him, and this is the first of two questions. It's in the second answer, which is much briefer, that he'll talk in ways that I'm happy about. Meaning this answer is going to be very accommodating of the current reality, and then we'll talk about the principles of the idea. So the person asking the question, there was a system in Israel at the time called key money. And key money was basically that if you got into a rental apartment, the law was they couldn't get you out. It was left over from Ottoman law, from mandatory law, and the state of Israel in the early state had a housing shortage. We're going to learn in the tshuva, and therefore renters could not be gotten rid of, basically, and the rent stayed very low. Like the amount you could lift it up, it's sort of like, in my mind, what rent control in New York City has become to some extent. In Manhattan, you can get into an apartment, and 30 years later, you find out people are paying $100 a month for their apartment because of the way that the rental board handled it. So you have this situation where in Israel, though, these being Jews, some of these people, they would either sublet it, that was one thing you could do, or you could take a big payment to get out. Meaning if you've been in the apartment for 30 years and the owner says, I can make a lot of money off of this now, if I just get rid of you, it might be worth the owner's while, it might be worth somebody else's while. Somebody else would say, I want to live there, and you're, let's say you're an old couple and you're ready to move, and I'll pay you $50,000 just for the right to be able to rent the apartment, and then I'll move in. So the person writing to the Ezra says, the case where the renter gets from the subletter when he leaves a huge payment, sorry, it doesn't have to be huge, any payment, he says, isn't that theft? Isn't he benefiting from somebody else's property? Isn't he making money off of somebody else's property? And even if it's true that owners in these cases tend to agree, and they tend to agree because the law was they didn't have many options, and you'd give a third of it to the owner. So what happens is, hapless owner, basically, hapless landlord has an apartment. He gets rent in the apartment. Let's say it's a rent that's $100 a month, $1,000 a month, whatever it is. And that's, let's suppose, somewhat below market value or a lot below market value. Come renter number two, it's worth his while to pay renter number one $20,000 for the right to rent this apartment, and he'll move into the apartment, and now all the old laws, meaning he'll assume the lease, so that all the old laws that say that the landlord can't evict people will apply to the second renter, because he's really under the first renter, and he'll be stuck. And the agreement was the landlord gets a third, and the renter gets two-thirds, but the landlord has no control, basically, over his apartment. The person writing the letter to the Tzitz Eliezer is uncomfortable with that arrangement. And the landlord, who's agreeing, sort of, it seems like everybody's agreeing and everybody's happy with it, it's only because he has no choice, because that's the way the law is set up. Tzitz Eliezer starts it, says it's an important question, and since he says, we're required by halacha not to avoid answering halachic questions as far as our intellect goes, and the Torah is well equipped to handle anything that comes up, because it's a Torat Chayim HaMakefet Kol HaChayim. It's a living Torah that's meant to be applied into real life. This is an essential element of the Tzitz Eliezer at this point in his life, and as he's writing, as I said earlier, this other work, Hilchot Medina, it's a crucial issue to him that people know and understand that the Torah and the Halacha can apply to real life, in a real life way. So you can find people who will say it applies to real life, and then they'll set up a real life which is completely alien and foreign to the people involved. That's not what the Tzitz Eliezer meant. He meant that we can build a life. It won't be exactly the same as people expect, because it's the Torah and you have to follow halacha, but a meaningful, productive, and working modern life can be built within a Torah system. And I think this is something I think from the tshuvot that I know of his, that stuck with him throughout his life. And there was a my teacher of Lichtenstein would have said a lodestar, right? A standard by which he judged himself and the halachic system of making sure that it's the kind of thing that could work in real life and that the Torah knows how to handle everything. So he says, it would seem like you're right, that the renter has no right to do this because it's not his. But what the problem becomes is, and we're going to get into it, I'm just going to give you a little bit of introduction to think about, when, let's suppose I rent something from you, what rights do I acquire by virtue of that rental? What rights don't I acquire? So if rental is a sort of sale, for example, let's say I rent something from you for a year. If that, I rent an apartment from you for a year, can I have friends over? So the answer is, of course I can have friends over. It's my apartment in that sense of it, right? So when I rent something from you, I acquire certain rights. The question is, what is the extent of those rights? And that's the question we're going to have here. So you say to yourself, well, maybe you can have friends over, but it's clear you can't rent it out to somebody else when you move out. Well, can I do an Airbnb and have people come in all the time? So these are questions. So he says, if we look in the Gemara, and part of his subtext here is that the Gemara has already raised these kinds of issues in some kind of parallel way, and that's what happens when halacha faces something that seems completely, completely new. What poskim do, what halachic authorities do, is they say, well, you think it's completely new, but in fact, there's this parallel that we already have in halachic sources. And almost always, there are parallels in halachic sources. That's part of understanding what Shlomo HaMelech said when he said, "Ein chadash tachat ha-shemesh," in Kohelet, there's nothing new under the sun. Of course, there are new things under the sun. He meant that it all sort of fits within a certain framework, and therefore we can find parallels. So that's what that's about to do with us. Gemara v'metzia, ayin tet, amud bet, 79b. Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis taught us, ha-sukhirat ha-sfina. Let's say somebody rented a ship. Right, so I rent a ship from the owner of the ship, and this is for transport, not a cruise ship, but I'm shipping something. Uparkala b'chatzi aderech. And then in half the way, along the way, I unloaded my cargo, so I don't need the ship anymore. So the Gemara says, I pay for the half trip, and the owner only has tar'omet on me. So tar'omet is when halachically somebody else has the right to be upset with me, and there's no specific ramifications for it, but it counts. It has meaning. Meaning it's you're a bad guy because you're not doing the right thing. So in this case, it seems like I'm only paying for half the way when I contracted to pay for the whole way, but he only has tar'omet. So the Gemara says, I don't understand the case. If the case is that the owner can find somebody else to pay it back. So let's say I take a cab and I tell the cab, I want you to drive me to X places. Oh, I'm not going there because then I have to, what's called, deadhead it on the way back. I'll have no passenger on the way back. I say, I'll pay you both ways. But when we get to the place, he finds a fare for the way back. So then there's no reason why I should have to pay for it. He found a fare. So that's what the Gemara says. Gemara says, if he found people to rent it for the way back, I did half the trip. And let's say he finds people for the other half, it's not good of me. So what's the tarhomet? But why is he upset with me? He gets his money. And if he doesn't find it, then I should have to pay the whole thing because that's what I contracted for. So the Rambam paskins, according to this Gemara, that he pays the whole trip, right? If he can't find the thing, I contracted for the whole thing, then I have to do it. It would be the same thing if I signed a lease on an apartment, let's say, and I wanted to rent it for 3 years, then I have to move out. And let's say the owner legitimately can't find new renters, I have to pay out the lease. But then the Rambam adds that if the person, the renter, the landlord, the owner, find somebody else to rent it from the place where he stopped, then he has to do that. Then he says, "V'yesh balas finat haromet," the owner of the ship does have the right to be upset with me, even if he rents it out to other people. So we're going to see why. So too, the Rambam says, let's suppose that I rented the ship to transport some goods of mine. And I meant to transport them to, X distance. I was going to transport them all the way to Italy. And then when we stopped to refuel in London, Liverpool? I think Liverpool is a shipping town. Or Greenwich, right? When I stopped, no, not Greenwich, Liverpool, I think. Anyway, wherever it is, I stopped to refuel. And somebody says, I want to buy that cargo, and I'm going to take it to Italy. So I say, great. And I do that. So the Rambam says, so what happens is, I pay the half that I've already done, and the other guy pays the other half. And then he says, but the owner of the ship does have taromet. Why? And the Rambam adds, shigaram lo lizbol dat ish acher. Because I'm allowed to do this. The owner can't refuse it, but I'm forcing the owner to take on a different guy who he never committed
to
allowing on his ship, and he may not like that person as much. Meaning, when you make an if I make a rental agreement with somebody, he's renting it to me. So the same thing will be true. Let's say I sublet it; he's taking on a whole different tenant. That new tenant might not be somebody he likes or doesn't like. So the Rambam says that's the taromit. He can't object to it because financially he's getting the money that he is owed, but he's allowed not to be happy. He's allowed to be unhappy about it. So based on that, Shulchan Aruch also paskins similarly. The Rambam then adds, by the way, that if when it comes to subletting an apartment or a house, he says there too you've got to be able to do it if the new tenant has the same number of members of the household as the old tenant. So then it's okay. We're going to see, the Tzitzit is going to say that that's because you can expect the same wear and tear from the new tenant with the same number of household members. They have more household members, then there might be more wear and tear, and then the owner could legitimately say, I didn't accept that. Now, the Rambam only says in terms of number of tenants, but as soon as you say that, it seems to me that there should be lots and lots of other claims that the owner could make as well, that if the owner can make a valid claim that this doesn't fall into the rubric of what he expected from the first tenant, that there's something new about the second tenant, that should be an issue. We're going to see examples of that as the response goes on. The Rambam also adds, let's say the owner says to him, if you don't want to continue the rental agreement, then just go and you don't have to pay me the rest of the rent. Right? So then we say that the first renter cannot sublet it because that's a function of al timna tov mi be'alav, that you're holding back some good from its owners until the first renter is going to rent to the second guy. Leave it to the first owner, who's actually the owner. So I rented it to you. That gave you the right to live there. You don't want to live there, that's fine. Don't live there, but don't rent it out to somebody else because I'm happy to take it back, if that were true. Right? So that's going to be relevant to the key money question too, because obviously if the first renter is getting money from the second renter, it's apparently an economic good that has value to it. The owner will say, I don't know why this second renter can get it, and then I'll be stuck with the second renter. I'll take it back. So we'll get to that. The Aruch HaShulchan also adds from his own Svara, he says, based on this Rambam, that the Rambam should obviously also agree that if, and this is something that I mentioned earlier, that if the second renter is somebody who's known to damage apartments, or he's a very powerful man, he's a mafioso, basically, so therefore, it's going to be much harder for me if I have complaints about him or problems with him. Meaning, comes along Joe Renter 1 and I rent it to him, we have a perfectly amicable relationship, but I know that if anything comes up, I'll take him to court. Right, or take him to Beit Din, and we'll go to Beit Din. He'll go to Beit Din with me, and whatever the Beit Din will say, we'll both be happy with, and I'm comfortable with that. Then he decides to sublet it to somebody. You don't have to go as far as the mafia, but somebody who I know who doesn't bother listening to Beit Din. So then already I'm going to take him to secular court, and in secular court maybe the law is different, in ways that are disadvantageous to me, or maybe I just don't want to have to do that, or maybe the second guy is more litigious than the first renter is, and it's well known. So the Aruch HaShulchan says in all these kinds of situations and anything similar to that, he thinks it's clear that the landlord has the right to say to the first renter, this person is unacceptable to me. He can't just say it, however. The Aruch HaShulchan thinks he has to prove it. So too, another example, let's suppose the second renter is somebody who has a well-established, tense relationship with the landlord. They don't like each other. They're known not to like each other. So therefore, too, the landlord can say, I never accepted that. So, in other words, the Aruch HaShulchan, the Tzitzit Ezer is pointing out, the Aruch HaShulchan is teaching us to note and to understand that what the Rambam really means is that based on that ship case, in terms of Taromet, where we said that the Rambam is understanding that the ship case, the Taromet, comes from not the loss of money, but from the fact that the owner of the ship is being made to put up with somebody who he might not be comfortable with for various reasons. The Rambam applies that to subletting as well, and whereas no Taromet, it sounds like if the landlord has no demonstrable reason not to be happy with the subletter, then there's no taromet. There's no complaint about it, but where he has a reason to be unhappy about the subletter, then he has a reason for a taromet. He can complain about it, be upset about it. But it seems like it's only taromet. It seems like the renter has the absolute right to do it, just that the owner has taromet. He can complain about it, be upset about it, and feel that he's been mistreated and dealt with badly. But the Aruch HaShulchan adds, although he also thinks that an apartment might be different as well, because on a ship, people don't actually live together. It's a question of shipping items. So you don't have to be around this other person other than the beginning and the end of the voyage or the journey where you drop off the materials. But with an apartment, so a cruise ship would obviously be different, or if the owner of the materials goes along on the ship for the journey, that would be different. But with an apartment where people are living together, and in many cases, the landlord is living on the premises as well, meaning the landlord has a second apartment or a third apartment or is there, so then the landlord has more of a right to say that that's even more than taromet, that he can't, he's not, there's no, it's not unacceptable to force him to put him up with this, and then you'd have more of an issue, and you'd have more of taromet, and maybe not even the right to sublet in that situation. That's what Shulchan Aruch seems to understand as well, says it's the answer, because in the case of renters, it doesn't mention this, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't mention this issue of taromet, of being upset one with the other. He just paskins in Choshen Mishpat that two people rented a property together. One can't substitute somebody else for them, and you have to stay with these two people. And that must mean, so the Shulchan Aruch understands it the way we just said, that if you're going to be living together, then you have more than just tarobit about who the choice is. And if somebody wants to put in somebody else, they need your consent to do so. Meaning it's worth remembering that sometimes the reason I want to get somebody to substitute is not because I want to make money off it, it's just because I have to leave. And I don't want to bear the financial loss. So let's say I have an apartment and I'm renting it, and I say, oh, I had a 2-year lease, but I'm leaving after a year. And they go to the owner, and the owner says, listen, it's a tough market right now. I'm going to have to charge you rent. And I say, well, I can find you a tenant. So I find a tenant at the same rent, let's say. So there, it's not a question of me making money off the owner. The question is, does the owner have to put up with it? So that would be the issue here. So part of the thing they're saying is that if people are going to be living together, there is some element where you need the consent of the owner as well in that situation. The implication would be that the decision points out that if, let's say, the owner is willing to say, listen, just go and it's fine, that then the renter shouldn't have the right to sublet it anyway, meaning 2-year lease, right? And the renter says, I can't fill out the lease and I can't find, and I want to find somebody else. He says, don't worry about it. I got it covered. And even if he paid up front, Zizilah says, if the owner is willing to return the half of the money, he thinks the Rambam's implication should be that the renter therefore has no more rights. But the Nesivot HaMishpat, which is a later commentary on the Shulchan Aruch from the 1800s, he held that if this renter is going to make a profit off of it, he thinks the owner can't get in the way of it. And he quotes a Shut Radvaz, who also says that the Radvaz also says that the renter can say, listen, unless you're willing to pay me what I can get from other people, then why should I lose out? Now that view, which the Tzadik has pointed out, does not seem to be the Rambam's view. That view of the Radvaz and the Tzivot HaMishpat would be indicating that when I rent something, it becomes mine to a full extent of, such that if there's profit to be made, it's my profit as the renter to be made. He says that's the sheet of the Maharam as well. That it's only in the case of metaltalin, a movable property, that we say that if I borrowed something from you or rented something from you, I can't give it to somebody else. That's true of movable property, right? I borrow a guitar. I don't know why that came to mind, but I borrow a guitar, and then I want to lend it to somebody else. The halacha is I'm not allowed to, because I'm the one, I mean, I'm allowed to, but then I'm completely responsible for it, and I can't rent it out because it's not mine to rent out. Because even when I rent it, it doesn't become mine in that way. But when it comes to landed property, these achronim held, then it becomes the renter's to a large extent. And he quotes in the Mukayos, which is already a Rishon, saying that if he was allowed to rent it out, or if the second tenant have no more household members, right, so then you think that it's the same damage, the same wear and tear, he says then he thinks the renter is the one who has the right to the property and the right to rent it out, because that's part of what he got when he rented it. So that's an interesting question. What rights do I get as a renter when I rent an apartment or a house from somebody? The Zachronim and even the Ruki Yosef seem to be saying they think that it includes the right to rent it to somebody else, whereas the Rambam with the ship case seem more to think that it's more a question of, when I rent something, I've guaranteed the owner a certain payment, and I have to live up to that guarantee. So if that involves getting another person, then I'm allowed to do it. But these achronim take the position that no, that as I rent it, it becomes mine, and that extra profit becomes mine. Because they say, when they rented it from the owner didn't make any conditions. So, meaning the idea would be, if I'm an owner, and I have an apartment, and I think it's worth $1,000 a month, and I rent it out to you for $1,000 a month, and we sign a 3-year lease, and I'm happy with that. So in the ordinary business world, I'm just happy with that, and I don't make any conditions. And then it turns out you can get $1,500 a month for the apartment. So it's a little annoying to me because I didn't do as good a business deal as I did, but maybe the answer is I did a deal that I was fine with, and I transferred certain rights to you, and now you have those rights, and therefore you can make some money. That's what these achronim are saying. The key to me is that they throw in these words of he didn't make it tonight, but it might be that in a lot of contexts of these contexts, there's an implicit condition, so implicit is always a problem, but it might be that the owners expect that it's not true. The owners are renting it out only for the purpose of this person living there. Now, if they made that explicit, then there would be an halakhic question, but it might be that they assume that because they assume that you're taking it not as an investment property, but as a living property. So that's all part of this discussion here. Machan Ephraim thought that if the first renter paid market rate, then for sure he has the right to sublet if he gets the opportunity. That it's only in cases where he's paying less than market rate. So then, since the owner is doing him a favor, then he doesn't get the right to rent it out. But if he's paying market rate, he thinks he becomes the basic owner of it in terms of being able to rent it out for the period of the rental that he has it. The Arsameach does say that if the owner came along at that point and said, "Oh, now the property value went up, you're thinking about subletting it. You know what? I'll pay you the extra. And let me back it." So the Arsameach thinks that the renter has to do that. So that the owner then retains at least enough rights to say, "I have the right of refusal on taking the apartment back and paying you the market rate on it." So this is where the complications come in. So according to all that, it says to the Ezer that it's not gezel, it's not clear theft to make money off of somebody else's property because I rented it. And once I rented it, that gives me the rights for all the time of the rental, whether it's a lot or a little, whether it's defined or undefined. So now we're getting back into, he's easing us back into the case in Israel because there weren't signed rental agreement times because the law was you couldn't get rid of tenants. So that's going to complicate this discussion, meaning until now the discussion has been, I rent it from you for 2 years or 3 years, whatever it is, a limited period of time, and during that time I become the owner of it. But if the government has stepped in and said, listen, once somebody gets into that apartment, they stay for as long as they want, there's nothing you can do about it, that's going to be a more complicated situation. It's whether that means that person really should have acquired rights to then make money off of my apartment, right? They're in, and the point of that governmental law, by the way, was to protect tenants from being evicted and stuff like that. But if this guy wants to move, so you'd wonder about why it should be we should allow them to make money off of this governmental law. So we're going to get to that in a minute, but that's where we are right now. Since the law is that for this entire time, this person, and the situation says, because of the housing shortages, so they've left an unlimited right to stay for the renter, so therefore the owner doesn't have any real ability to get more money out of it for this time, so therefore he thinks the renter has the right to get, because of that right that the government has given him, to get money for it, and the owner can't really object to it. Now, I have to say, I think that part of it to me is a little bit problematic, because I think this could equally have said that the government only meant to transfer the right to stay to the tenant and never meant to transfer the right to hold on to it and extort money out of the owner or get money from the renter. So Tzedezah will get to some of that in the second shul we'll get to, but that's where he is right now. That as long as the law is this way, the government's given this right, and the renter therefore can make money off of that right. But once he's out to the answer, then the rental relationship becomes a relationship between the second renter and the original owner. And he pays rent, meaning the first renter gets money to leave, the second renter comes in, he assumes basically the rights of the first renter to this apartment in perpetuity as far as the law was concerned at the time, because they didn't want to get people kicked out. But from then on, he pays rent to the owner. But to my mind, that also shows that this is a problem, because he's assuming the legal personality of the first renter. The first renter is going away completely. So it's not like the first renter maintains a right over it. He's being bought out of this right, and then somebody else is coming in. I would have thought that would have meant that the owner has something to say about it, but that's the way the situation goes right now. This whole key money arrangement, where you pay the renter money and the owner gets a third, he says, that, by the way, the state, the law, has agreed to. So if it's a legal arrangement and transaction, that's the way it happens, and that's the way it happens, that's what we do, and we say about these things, he says, Tzedezah says, minhago ker halakha. People know this in many more broad contexts, but here he applies it. There are times when the custom is, whatever the custom is, and that even goes against, even if it diverges from what halakhically we would have said should happen, we nonetheless would follow the custom on these issues, especially in monetary issues. So already in this first tshuva, he does mention that somebody could have been, he used the word mit'akesh, to be stubborn about it, to say the law never really supplied the first renter a right of of giving over that right to somebody else. The law was about protecting that renter from being evicted. And if the law was about protecting that renter from being evicted, maybe that's the only right that he has, and therefore maybe he shouldn't have the right to do this. So he says, you're right, you could have that argument, but that's not the way people do it, that's not the custom. And the custom is that you pay the key money and the renter goes away and a third of it goes to the owner and everybody's happy with it and there's no fighting about it. And that's the way it goes. So then in this tshuva, he closes with a summary of his conclusions. The renter does have the right to rent it to somebody else for as long as he himself has the right to be there and to get key money for giving over that right. If the second group of renters causes some kind of damage, or they're more members of the household, and therefore it's likely to imagine to be more damage, that's going to be a problem for the first renter, because part of his agreement was that he was going to fix everything. So now you could say the second renters take on the requirement to fix anything, but the point is that the reason why the renter is allowed to transfer the property, and I think I skipped it in reviewing the tshuva, but since I just said it, part of the reason they thought it was clear that he could transfer the right is because when owners were the ones who were responsible for fixing things, they could say, well, I don't like to have this second family come in because they'll cause more damage. But in their times already, it was the job of the renter to return the apartment, whenever it got returned, in full pristine condition. And since that was true, it's going to be the first renter's responsibility or the second renter's responsibility to make sure the department is clear. Now, I think I'm sorry for stepping in, but I think that's also a hard claim to make because, you know, if you have a rent that's going to last for 20, 30 years, so then what you're saying is you're going to expect the renters to maintain the apartment and upkeep it, but they might not. A lot of times you just let maintenance slide, and at the end of the 20 years, there's a huge bill, and they can't always pay it, and then it's a problem. And I would think owners should have the right to be worried about that and to be concerned about that issue. In any case, back to Tzitzili Ezer. If the second renters pay more money because of the number of renters they have, and you can say it is going to cause damage to the apartment, that goes to the owner, not to the first renter. And if you really have, it's enough people that you can worry that it's going to literally damage the whole building, not just like cause nicks in the walls, but it's going to the building can't handle all the, there's a problem that it's too heavy a weight, too heavy a load in the apartment, and then the owner can also object and say it's unacceptable, right? Meaning, let's say the second group is going to pack the apartment with 15 grand pianos that are very heavy, you can say, no, that they can't do. And then there you have the right to step in to protect your building and your investment. If the owner wants to pay what the second renter would have been willing to pay, then the first renter has to give it back to the owner, and then the owner can get back his right. And I think in the end, that's what destroyed the key money system. I think they changed the laws a little bit, but my thought is that owners just got wise to this, and instead of taking the third, they would step in for all of these apartments that were rising in value, and they would take them back, and that was the way the system sort of died out, because nobody had these long-term rights of rental anymore anyway, and so the system sort of went away on its own eventually. But it took a long time, and a lot of people made a lot of money just by virtue of the fact they happened to have lucked into an apartment that they rented, and the laws were in their favor. I think that's a problem we're going to see in the second tshuva in just a second. Okay. Right now, let's see it. There's a couple more small points. We've seen them before. So then he responds to this guy again on the 2nd of Adar of Tavshin Yud Bet, so a couple of months later, and apparently the guy was unhappy about the answer that he got, and he said, everything I wrote to you was talking about what is. But if you want to know about what should be and what the state should do, if we have the right to make new laws in this state and we want landlords and tenants to have the right laws with each other and to get along well together, so obviously you're right. It doesn't make any sense to have a custom where the renter can get to main mafteach, can get key money just because he happened to have lucked into a rental, and especially if we make laws to protect the tenant from getting evicted, that the tenant can then turn around and turn that into a money-making opportunity, obviously that doesn't make sense. Now, it's interesting to me that he says obviously it makes sense when the tenor of the first tshuva was that, yeah, this is what we deal with, this is fine, it's all good. And it's an interesting thing to watch him having apparently neglected to say it the first time, even though he meant it. Especially because if you have a system like that, then it causes fights, right? Nobody's happy with each other. It's not good for the renter, for the landlords, because they own property that other people are making money off of just because the law wants them not to mistreat tenants. It's an odd thing. He says it's not good for renters either because you have to end up the system, you have to pay like a lot of money just to be able to get into an apartment to rent it. And that's hard on renters too, meaning the original law was to keep people in their apartments so that they could not get evicted. But now it's going to turn out that if I want to get into an apartment, I have to pay a huge amount of money up front because I have to pay key money to the previous one because it's the only apartment available because there's a housing shortage. So that system, he says, doesn't work either. It's not good for anybody. And therefore, you really have to sit down and have the state come up with laws, this is what he says, that are logical, that make sense, and that on average are good for both the landlord and the tenant. That's what we're striving for. We're striving for laws that adjust to everybody's rights. It's easy to imagine rich landlords, you know, bothering tenants, but you can have it the other way too. You can have tenants profiting off of landlords where the landlords are basically making almost nothing because they're stuck with these laws that don't let them make even near what they should be able to make. So you want to find things that take account of both sets, both rights and the rights of both sides, and makes everybody happy to the extent that you can. He also adds here that he didn't say before, he thinks the only time you have a right to take key money is one of two situations. Either the person you want to move, the renter, wants to move somewhere else and he's going to need key money to get into that other place because the system is that before you get into a rental, you have to get rid of the other renter and that renter wants key money. Or if this renter was forced to pay key money to get into this apartment, so then he thinks that in those situations you can take it. But let's suppose, however it happens, this person was in an apartment, just walked up, paid, you know, a month's security and the first month's rent, and was in the apartment. That's all he's ever done in the thing. So he's got this final rental agreement. And then however it happens, he has the money to either build or buy a house of his own, and he builds or buys the house. So the residualist says he thinks from that moment on that he builds the house, his rental rights to this apartment end. Now, I think if he wanted to still live there, he would think so. But he thinks that the idea that he has continuing rental rights because he happens to have signed a lease for that long, he thinks all that ends and none of that comes into play here, and there's no key money that gets in. So as far as he's concerned, when he was answering the key money question before, what he meant was, given the system that we have, in which people are either paid in key money and therefore they have the right to get their investment back, or they're going to need key money to get into their new place, he thinks they have the right to take the key money from the people who are coming into the new apartment, and that's the custom, and that's what we do, and therefore that's what we do, and therefore you're allowed to. But just to make money off the thing, he says that he doesn't accept and that he's not willing to live with. And that is some stuff on an old system of key money that doesn't really exist anymore, but it gives insight into landlord-tenant relationships and the importance of finding the ways to cover both purposes and rights to make sure that everybody gets treated fairly financially by halakha. That's a responsible day for the 21st of Tevet. Have a great day.